1950s, Bell Laboratories teamed up with a man by the name of George Miller to help alter the course of the communications industry up until that point. For 60 years leading up until the 1950s, Bell Laboratories had spent millions upon millions of dollars doing study after study at failed attempts to try and perfect what we know now as our phone number. At the time, George Miller was the leading researcher on the human brain, specifically the brain storage function, things that we know as short and long-term memory functions. In 1955, Miller wrote a paper that focused on what he found to be the magic number with regards to this memory. It's known, or the magic number we know now is 7. But more importantly, that paper focused on the presentation of information and how the presentation of that information greatly impacted our abilities to both quickly remember and recall information that we've learned. This mechanism was found to be so powerful, many of you probably have a phone number that's flashed into your head from long ago that you probably have not dialed in many, many decades. With smartphones, in order to place a call, we just simply pick a name out of a list, and away we go. We can make that call. No one actually dials a phone anymore. I have a little mechanism that I use to actually remember my wife's number because I just pick her name from a list. It says darling wife in the list. I have to picture myself at Kroger's in the checkout line because I use the phone number for our membership card. It's the only way I can remember it. So I'm in the checkout. I'm looking at the kiosk and I know what the number pad looks like. And so I know what numbers I press, and that's how I can remember her phone number. With that said, I can remember my grandmother's phone number from 25 years ago and haven't dialed it in well over 2 decades. So why is it we can remember certain things and we don't remember others? Miller had come to understand how rhythms, patterns, and presentation of information played very critical roles when it came to how efficiently our human brains could store specific information. We've come to a point in time at that point when Miller's research, where science had finally caught up to God. Not to say that science was better than God or science knew more than God, but we were at a point in time in history where technology and research and the mechanisms that we use could actually monitor human brain waves and enzymes and different things that we could see exactly what God knew all along when he designed us. This morning, I'd like to take the time I have to look at a tool that we have that can help us in our Christian walk. Last week, we know Mr. Winter focused on fasting. This is not one of the official 4 tools that we're told with prayer, fasting, study, and meditation. However, by the end of this, I believe you'll see that it is a tool that has significant benefits for all of us, we as people, as well as many others that we'll look at. This tool has been around since before mankind even walked the earth. In fact, it'll be around long into the kingdom and beyond. It takes advantage of many of the same properties that George Miller had studied when he was researching the phone number in the human brain. The tool I'm speaking of is the art of music and singing. With the time I have this morning, I'd like to look at several accounts in the Bible where music and singing were used and what we can learn about their benefits from these accounts. Much like my grandparents' phone number that I can recall from 25 years ago, having not used it, why is it that songs possess the same ability within our human minds? How is it we can't remember 4 things on a grocery list 5 minutes away, but we can remember a song we haven't heard in 15 years? We can hop right in and sing every line. It wasn't 4 months ago that many of us in this room were sitting around a campfire. Kevin and Brad, I was sitting right next to them. I could hear the intricate details that they were planning each and every song. Usually Kevin would lean over and say, "You want to do this one?" And Brad goes, "Yeah, let's do that one." It was really detailed out. It was organized, planned. And everyone sitting around the campfire by the second line knew every word of the song they were playing. And I don't think many of us have listened to those songs day in and day out. We probably hadn't heard them in years. And yet, dozens of people knew the song. Songs, we don't forget. Miller discovered what God already knew when he designed us. Let's turn to Exodus 14. Exodus 14, and we're going to start in verse 30. What they have found over the years is if songs happen to rhyme, the information's actually learned and stored even quickly, or even quicker. Here in America, often the first song that children learn is their ABCs. If you break that song down with the rhythm of the song, all of the breaks end on a letter that rhymes. Helps children recall and learn them faster. Exodus 14 and verse 30, it says, "And so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw a great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses." 15 and verse 1. "Then Moses and the children of Israel sang this song to the Lord and spoke, saying, I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. His horse and his riders has thrown into the sea." Now, to be clear, I think it's a coincidence that that gloriously and sea do rhyme. It's in the English. They obviously were not speaking English at that time. And I can't sing it in the Hebrew, so I can't confirm that it actually rhymes in Hebrew either, of which they would have spoken at the time. But God just brought the Israelites out of Egypt. We know the story, out of bondage. They held a huge celebration that first night that they left Egypt. They spent a week wandering towards the Red Sea, and they found themselves pinned against the Red Sea with the Egyptian army, the most powerful military in the world they were surrounded by. God had carried out many miracles up until that point, many which no one had ever seen before. And then God's intervention again brought them through the Red Sea. Immediately following that event, in verse 15, they're said to have captured a song about the historic event there. Of all the things they could have done, they sang a song about it. We know the events make up the foundation of what God was trying to teach Israel. It teaches them their identity, teaches them their history, the vision he was created using the Israelites as their example nation. It also, the vision he's creating for his plan, because that's the start of the Holy Day plan for all of mankind. It's critical that they never lost the details of what happened that day leading up to that day. So that day, they crossed the Red Sea. It closes a chapter in their history as slaves to Egypt. What God did for them there in Egypt was going to be the foundation for their identity as a nation and the foundation moving forward for his Holy Day plan. Forensic studies have studied brains' recall. Many times they would put a subject in front of an event that they had staged. Maybe it was a couple in a heated argument, or it was something, they saw something happen, an event, which would really take all of their attention. And then they would bring the person aside and ask them a question unrelated to what they were watching, but it was indirectly related. What color was the girl's dress? Was she holding a purse? Which way was the man facing? Did he laugh? Could be anything. Quite often, no one could recall what happened. We often forget things we see. We forget things people tell us. We forget things we learn in the past. We forget places we've been or what we've done. But we rarely ever forget things we've put to song. At different points in time throughout the Bible, we'll find that song is often used during critical events. If I were to ask you, what year did Columbus discover America? Most people in here could tell me. 1492. And we know that because there's a cute little song that says in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. If you ask, when did we discover Plymouth Rock? Most of us wouldn't know. I actually had to look it up because the last time we spoke about gratitude, it's 1620. We likely learn these two bits of information on the same exact day in school. We retain one and we don't retain the other. Let's look at Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31. In verse 30, said, "Then Moses spoke in the hearing of all the assembly of Israel the words of this song until they were ended." We reached another pivotal point in Israelites' history. There's going to be a massive shift in the leadership for the people. The leader that they knew as Moses, the one they associated with as being their connection to God, was no longer going to be with them. He knew he was not crossing over the Jordan. Joshua was going to be taking them forward. God inspired Moses to leave them with something that they're going to carry forward, something that will help them remember who they are as a people, something that would remember them to who to rely on, some of the recent pitfalls they had experienced during that time. If you read that chapter, it goes through all that. It also covers their responsibility to God moving forward. It reminds them of that their connection is not Moses, but God. We read in Deuteronomy 32 and verse 44. So Moses came with Joshua, the son of Nun, and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. Moses finished speaking all the words to all Israel, and he said, "Set your hearts on all the words that I testify among you today, which you shall command your children to carefully observe. All the words of the law, for it is not a futile thing, because it is your life. And by the words that you shall prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to possess." It's a song about the covenant of God that God made with the Israelites. It's important that you pass this on down to the generations. Pass it on to your children. God chose to do that through song. It's an effective mechanism to help them remember. We were there last week, but let's turn back to it. Joshua 24, this is the last chapter in Joshua. We can see here that it was a very effective way to pass that information down and have them retain it. We covered it there last week. 24 and verse 29. It says, "Now it came to pass, after these things, that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-serah, where in the mountains of Ephraim, on the north side of Mount Gash. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had known all the works of the Lord which he had done for Israel." Were they perfect? No. But here God confirms they're headed in the right direction. They have definitely retained all the information they were supposed to according to the covenant. They did well as long as Joshua was there and they remembered that information that he was preaching. The generation immediately following Moses, in all of his direct reports, remembered what they were to do. They successfully served the Lord. Now we know as generations passed, they begin to deviate. Maybe the children weren't as excited as their fathers were, and their children didn't teach their children as well. They began to wander down through the judges and then into the kings. The nation would ebb and flow spiritually for hundreds of years. But specific to the generation that heard the song of Moses, as he stayed on Mount Nebo, they held on to the information. In addition to be able to learn and remember, quickly remember things, songs are often used to unite people, create bonds between individuals. The military has known this for a very long time. This is why soldiers chant when they're marching. Not only does it serve to help keep them in formation, keep rhythm, it forms a psychological bond that they have proven to help those soldiers begin to form a unit as they're preparing for battle. In studies, they found that people that sing competitively often have as strong a bonds as professional athletes on teams. They bond through singing. It's been shown that people who sing in large groups release higher levels of oxytocin in their brains than those who sing solo. This is the hormone that's associated with trust, with belonging, love, joy. Let's turn to Matthew 26. I'm going to read one verse here, Matthew 26. Verse 30, it says, "And when they sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives." It's a very familiar scripture for us. We obviously rehearse this every year. We see again the use of another song. Jesus knew that he was going to be arrested that night. He was going to be crucified the next morning. He had just finished the last Passover with the apostles. He had provided for them bread, wine, and the act of foot service, or the foot washing as the act of service. He knew this was the end of his physical journey. He knew that they were about to witness something that could really shake them. They could struggle to keep their eyes on the kingdom. He knew at this point in time, there was going to be a very odd shift for them. He had been there for many years with them. He knew them. Sometimes they understood. Sometimes they miss the boat in understanding what it is he was trying to do. Of all the things he could have done with them that night, they sang a song after dinner. We too are encouraged to do the exact same thing. If we turn to Ephesians 5, Ephesians 5 and verse 1, it says, therefore, be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also loved us and given himself for us in offering and sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. Let's skip down to verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of God is. Do not be drunk with wine or with dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalm and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things to God the Father, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another in the fear of God. We're told here to be imitators of God. We saw Christ did this very thing that we read about back in Matthew 26. We're to encourage each other to continue moving forward. It says the times are evil. We need to encourage each other. And one way to do that is with songs and hymns and spiritual songs. Singing, making melody in your hearts. Keep each other focused on what the real objective is, the purpose of why we do what we do. You owe it to each other, just like Christ did for the apostles. Songs can be used not only to unite, but they can be used to provide hope or even an emotional change. Study at Oxford University found that a person's heart rate, blood pressure, and mood can be altered based on music, based on the tempo of what they're listening to. Fast music would increase a person's heart rate. Slow music would decrease. This is often when you call a helpline or a customer service line, you'll hear slow jazz music or maybe slow classical music. It's used to help calm those that may be on the line, holding, waiting, that could be a little irritated because they've experienced an issue. There are several places throughout history that we can turn to see different groups of people that have gone through horrific times that have turned to songs to provide comfort, to provide hope for a better day. This mechanism is a song that it's a mechanism of song has shown to lower cortisol levels, which is the hormone associated with stress, and point them towards a better future. Let's turn to 1 Samuel and verse 16. Or chapter 16, excuse me. Chapter 16 and verse 14, it says, but the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and the distressing spirit from the Lord troubled him. And Saul's servants said to him, surely a distressing spirit from God is troubling you. Let our master now command your servants who are before you to seek out a man who is skillful player on the harp. And it shall be that when he plays with his hand, when the distressing spirit from God is upon you, and you shall be made well. The effect that music has on people has been understood for a very long period of time. They may not have been able to measure cortisol levels, but they understood music influenced mood. So, in verse 22, it says, then Saul sent to Jesse, saying, please let David stand before me. He has found favor in my sight. And so it was, whenever the Spirit from God was upon Saul, that David would take his harp and play it with his hand. Then Saul would become refreshed and well, and distressing spirit would depart from him. Here we see David skillfully played the harp for Saul and put him in a better mood. It would pull him out of his anxiety, out of his depression, the stress that he was feeling at that time. This must have taken place on several different occasions, because it doesn't say that he did it once. It says whenever the Spirit was upon him. It must have been several times. It was not a single instance. We're not told exactly how many times or how often it happened, but David, being an excellent musician, he himself often turned to music, often going to God through music, knowing God listened. Let's look at Acts 16. We'll look at a second example. We know David wrote many songs. As you turn into Acts, he wrote songs about God's protection, his mercy, his strength. Jokingly, I think if we didn't have David's music, we'd be missing half of our church hymnal, because he wrote most of that. Let's look at Acts in verse 6, or chapter 16 and verse 25. It says, but at midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. Let's back up and set the stage a little bit. Earlier in the chapter, Paul and Silas were being followed around by a little girl, possessed by a spirit that was being used by a wealthy man. She had followed them for several days. In fact, they followed them for so long that in verse 18 it says, Paul was greatly annoyed. For this reason, Paul commanded the spirit to leave and left them on the wrong side of that city's politics. They were then accused of being a Jew. They were humiliated, stripped naked, beaten with rods. They were thrown in prison, put in shackled into the inner prison with a guard chained to him. At that point in the story, it doesn't tell us, but if you continue reading down, we find out that Paul's actually quite offended as well. The next morning when they release him and the magistrate says, go, disappear, he says, we're not going anywhere, because he knows that they're Romans. They had rights at that time. So he says, they're not going anywhere, and the magistrate comes back and says, please go, because he knew that they had done wrong. So if we back up, they're in prison. He was a little irritated the whole time. So this brings us to the verse we just read in verse 25. At midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. We're not told exactly what their motivation was behind why they're praying and singing at midnight. Did they know the guard? Did they know the guard was close to conversion? We're not told. Based on some of the things we read and how things played out the next morning, I speculate that Silas started the singing, maybe trying to pull Paul back, maybe trying to redirect some of the energy he had, knowing what kind of mood he was in, through prayer and singing to help ease the stress of the situation, help them bond, help comfort where they were. They didn't know how things were going to play out at that time. They obviously were very into it because it says all the prisoners were listening. They weren't exactly just singing to themselves. They were really giving it some gusto. This brings us to our last benefit that I'll cover this morning for music and singing. It's used in worship and praise. This is exactly what Paul and Silas were doing while they were in prison. There's any number of places that we can turn in the Bible to show different individuals using song in order to praise and show glory to God. Let's turn to 2 Chronicles 5. I'll read what's likely one of the bigger celebrations here. In 2 Chronicles 5 here we read, it's the first temple being created. If you're back up for several chapters closing out, or several verses, that's not right, several chapters closing out 1 Chronicles, we see that David is prepping for the temple. He talks about him organizing different things. He's organizing the Levites, the priests, the musicians. He's organizing the building of the temple. He's gathering materials. In 2 Chronicles chapter 1, talks about the transition to Solomon as king. In chapters 2 and 3, they begin building the temple. And 4, the details about the furnishings of the temple. And come to chapter 5, it's the ceremony of bringing the ark into the temple. We'll skip down to verse 13. 2 Chronicles 5 and verse 13, it says, indeed it came to pass when the trumpets and singers were as one to make one sound to be heard in praising and thanking the Lord. And when they lifted up their voice with the trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music and praised the Lord, saying, he is good. His mercy endures forever. The house of the Lord was filled with a cloud, so that the priests could not continue ministering because of the cloud. For the glory of the Lord had filled the house. Knowing David had organized all the musicians, we're led to believe that this is quite a spectacle that was very pleasing to God as he entered the temple in the Holy of Holies. Music has never been a talent that I've been blessed with. It doesn't take a multi-million dollar government-sponsored study. We could probably do a quick polling of those on the webcast that know when I lead songs. The mute button might be used every now and then. So I don't blame any of them. It's kind of an exercise in forgiveness, to be honest with you. It's fine. But I, however, do have a deep appreciation for people who do have that talent. We've all been to feast sites where music has greatly enhanced the experience and the emotion that it brings with special music. We can only imagine what it sounded like with David's orchestra and the efforts that we read in the end of 1 Chronicles that he put together to have musicians and singers on hand. This again happens in Ezra 3 and verse 10 with the rebuilding of the temple. For the sake of time, I won't read it there, but it says that they had music according to the ordinance of David, king of Israel. Music and singing were a big part of the ceremony, according to what David had recorded in the last chapters of 1 Chronicles. Knowing that David was a man after God's own heart, let's read what God himself encourages singing. Let's go to Job 38. We'll go back to the beginning. Job 38 and verse 4. God speaking here to Job, he says, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line out upon it? Or what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstones when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy?" We know the story here. It's the culmination of the book of Job. God speaking to Job, he's recalling, "Job, tell me what you contributed when the earth was made." All rhetorical questions, because Job knows God did everything. He was the one who inspired, designed, and created all things. In verse 7, though, we read that when the foundations were made, and their laws that govern everything we know, the angels sang out. They glorified God for what he had done. Before there were even humans, the angels sing. Even in the spirit world, they exercise this tool that we found to help bond, uplift, encourage, and glorify us. While we're looking at singing in the spiritual realm, we might as well cover the other end of that time continuum. Let's turn to Zephaniah chapter 3. This will be our final scripture, Zephaniah chapter 3. It's the fourth to last book in the Old Testament. Read 3 and verse 14. It says, "Sing, O daughters of Zion, shout, O Israel. Be glad and rejoice with all your hearts, O daughters of Jerusalem. The Lord has taken away your judgments. He has cast out your enemy. The King of Israel, the Lord, is in your midst. You shall see disaster no more." We see here this is an end-time prophecy when God is dwelling with men and there will finally be peace. Verse 16, "And in that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, do not fear, Zion, let not your hands be weak. The Lord your God in your midst, the Mighty One, will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you with his love. He will rejoice over you with singing." God himself rejoices with singing. Now, whether that means he's going to sing or that he's going to command a few legions of angels to sing on his behalf, he encourages and supports singing to show celebration and praise of his people. In the 1950s, George Miller began to understand what God knew all along. Through the use of patterns and presentations, he found that the human brain can store specific amounts of information for extremely long periods of time. Through time and the discoveries of modern science, we've been able to observe many of the benefits this tool of singing has on humans. It's a good fit for teaching the Israelites and helping them to remember their identity through decades into the future. Helping them remember what God had not only done for them up until that point, but their responsibility to God moving forward. The use of songs has been shown to influence mood, relieve stress, unifying individuals together through challenging times. Finally, We're able to see that humans are not the only one to sing. We weren't even the first ones to sing. Singing has been a part of the spirit world for long before humans were made, and it will continue long into the future to praise and glorify the Creator.